What is up, basketball fans? Welcome to another episode of the NBA Outlet. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me, as always, Corey Waldron, special guest, Jorge Cantu. Things are going to get spicy. What is up, fellas? How we doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. And as always, excited to be back here in the Outlet and ready to have some spicy combos.
Whenever you're on, Jorge, things tend to be a little bit spicy. So always a pleasure to have you on. And Nick, again, always a pleasure to be doing the pod with you.
Yes, sir. We got plenty to talk about. Obviously, post All-Star break, games are starting to really matter for teams. But as always, before we get started, check out the show, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. But Corey, I'm going to pass it over to you. Get us started with a quick game.
So we're going to play a little game based on usage rates in the NBA. And we'll basically say, is he being overused or underused?
Okay.
So the first guy we have just came back, and this was actually something I saw today on ESPN, which kind of sparked the interest for the game. Isaiah Thomas, since he's been back, is averaging a usage rate of 26.7. Overused or underused?
You want to go first, Nick?
Yeah, sure. I think a player like Isaiah Thomas, for him to be effective, he's got to have a high usage rate because he's going to take a lot of shots. That's kind of what you expect from him. Obviously, he's still trying to fit in because he just got back from injury. So I think that's probably about right for him with his style of play. He's not playing huge minutes, so I think it's okay. If his minutes were to jump and he kept that usage rate, I think it would kind of hurt Denver. But right now, I think it's fine.
I can kind of agree with that, but I think it's better to give the ball to the younger guys a little bit more, let Jokic handle it more. Obviously, as Nick said, it's not like Thomas is playing a ton of minutes, but still, I think it's just a little bit overused. Like, speaking about Isaiah, of course.
So the next guy is your guy, Jorge, Justice Winslow, at a 20.4 usage rate. Overused or underused?
Jorge, you go first. This is your dude.
I think that's just about right. Maybe it could actually be a little bit underused, in my opinion, just because he has the physical tools to dominate the game in so many different ways. I think he could have the ball in his hands a little bit more. But obviously, Dwayne Wade is on the team, and he gets a lot of possessions. And then we have Goran Dragic back, who was, of course, our starting point guard before Justice. So I think it's about right for him. But I would like to see him with the ball in his hands a little bit more often, just because he's our point guard of the future. So maybe giving him more reps now would be kind of like the better option. But I think for now it's about right.
Yeah, I'd probably say it's a little bit under because his role changed as the season kind of progressed. He went into the Point Winslow role, so now he's kind of that playmaker for this team. Obviously, it'll probably drop when Dragic is fully 100% back and healthy. But I think right now it's probably a little under because they don't necessarily have a ton of playmakers on the Heat.
I'd agree with that. Next up, Drew Holiday for the New Orleans Pelicans at a 24.7 usage rate. Overused or underused?
Underused. I'm going to cut you off, Jorge. I feel like Drew Holiday has just been so awesome this season. It's crazy. And no one really talks about it because Anthony Davis and all of that, you know, hoopla and whatever it is. And then Corey and I were doing the last show. Drew Holiday was top five in assists. So it's not like he's not scoring. He's scoring, he's passing, and he's playing great defense. He deserves the touches.
No, don't worry. I actually agree. I also think he's a tad bit underused just because, as Nick said, he does such a good job with the ball in his hands, whether that be scoring or making plays for other teammates. Of course, now there's the drama with Anthony Davis, so things are going to get a little bit crazy there, and he might be, you know, needing to create a couple more shots for himself. But still, I think he does a really good job with the ball in his hands, and it's not like you would want that to be, you know, you would want his usage rate to drop. I think it should be a little bit higher.
And just to put a little stat around it, he has the same usage rate as Tim Hardaway Jr., and he's only ranked 53rd in rate of usage.
Damn.
Interesting. I would like to see his usage rate for just the last month after Anthony Davis has been in and out of the lineup and all that drama. I bet you it's up, and that's probably where they need it to be at over the rest of the season. Obviously, yeah, They're probably not going to make the playoffs, but still.
Definitely, yeah.
All right. Nikola Vucevic,
27. Oh, that was probably your best pronunciation of Vucevic ever.
Thank you. I have it written down. Maybe it says different. I can see it in my own handwriting. With a usage rate of 27.2, overused or underused? Or just right. I guess it could be just right, too.
I think that's quite unusual for a center in today's game. But Vucevic has been really good for the Magic. Still, I would say a little bit overused just because you would like, as I said, with with the Nuggets. You would like the other younger guys to have a couple more touches, maybe Aaron Gordon and Jonathan Isaac and whatnot, to have some more touches. But I mean, Vucevic is doing a great job with as many possessions as he's taking. So I guess there's not too much I can complain about. But still, I think it's a little bit over what you would want from a modern-day setter.
I think it's actually just right. I think the problem with Orlando is they don't necessarily have a ton of guys who can play, make, or create their own shot. So Vucevic is able to do that. They look for him. They hit him in the high post sometimes to initiate the offense. So I'm okay with Vucevic at that.
I think Vucevic there is pretty fair. All right, next up, Rudy Gobert at 17 usage rate. Underused or overused? And granted, I know sometimes it's tough with the centers because they don't generally have the ball in their hands for large periods of times, but he is rather low compared to other centers.
I think it's just kind of his limited game, and that's no disrespect to him. Obviously, he's great defensively, great rim roller, but doesn't really have much of a post game. It's not like he has handles. It's not like he's an elite passer, so I think that's kind of the usage rate you expect from him. He's usually catching passes within the rim or in the paint, so I think that's about right.
Is it crazy to say that he's being overused? Because, as Nick pointed out, it's not like he has this huge offensive repertoire. At most, he can catch the ball near the rim and dunk or go up with a short hook or something. But he'll not hit the mid-range shots, or he'll not pull up from three. He'll not even, throw a floater here and there. It's not like he can do a lot. So I think that's a little bit, of course, the usage rate also takes into account turnovers and assists. Yeah, so I think that's, that's more that you would like for a guy that's as offensively limited as Gobert. So I think Mitchell and Rubio, I'm pretty sure that they both have the big load on the team, but I think that's quite high for Gobert.
Now this one's interesting. Kyle Lowry at 18.8 usage rate. Overused or underused?
I think with all the versatility they have in Toronto, all the different players they have, guys that can create their own shot, and Lowry really being an initiator this year, not as much scoring, I think that's just about right. When he gets fully healthy and maybe back in rhythm, I think he's missed probably like 20-plus games, if not more, this year. He'll probably get a little bit higher when he gets more comfortable with his shot, but I think that's fine for right now.
I do agree with Nick, but I'm 100% convinced that Lowry could thrive if he had a slightly higher usage rate, say 22% or something. Of course, it's tough when you have Kawhi in town and with the emergence of Pascal Siakam and Danny Green also contributing, and now Marc Gasol coming into town. So, of course, it's tough. You have to, cut the pie in equal pieces, or maybe not as equal of pieces, but I think Lowry could do much better, and we've seen him done better with the bigger roles. Now he just needs to prove it in the playoffs, but I think he could do more if he had a high usage rate. But for now, I guess it's fine with how things are going in Toronto. It's
working. If he was healthy, too, I think that makes an impact. In and out of the lineup, it's harder to kind of catch your rhythm and really be a big part of the offense consistently and take a lot of shots. Like you mentioned, I think Siakam, taking some more usage rate in terms of that team and having the ball in his hands a lot more probably has an impact on that.
Yeah, but even then, Lowry is I think he's a super underrated three-point shooter. Like, his name is not someone who stands out, immediately as a long-range threat. But his stats have been pretty good, and he can just pretty much catch and shoot, pull up every now and then. And if he could take a couple more of those shots, I think it would help the offense. But, I mean, if it's not broken, you're not going to fix it. So, not too much to complain about from Toronto's end.
Right. Two more left. Miles Turner at 20. Overused or underused? I had to put in the pacer.
What a surprise. Jorge, you want first or you want me to go?
Is that too much? 20%? I assume that's gone up ever since Oladipo went down with the injury. But, I'm not that big of a Miles Turner fan. Like, he's done better this season, but I mean, I'm biased. But,
oh, man.
Yeah, I'm a little bit biased, definitely, but maybe he's a little bit overused.
I think it's fine. I think, Miles Turner is like a big key to the Pacers' future if they're going to take another step without, signing a big free agent or making a trade. Like, he still has potential. He's a young guy. Defensively, he's really improved, so he's earned those touches. And the offense has never really hit the ceiling we've expected. So I think getting the ball in his hands more, especially with Oladipo out, is a good opportunity for the Pacers to see what they have in him.
Agreed. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, but like with him being a young guy and a part of the future, like I get it. But when Oladipo is there, I don't think he should have the ball in his hands that much. But you know, that let's leave this for the hot take marathon.
All right, so last one, Jimmy Butler at 21.8 usage rate. Now, granted, this is also the same usage rate as Ben Simmons, but I'm pretty sure this is also going to take into account Butler when he was on Minnesota, and obviously he's taken a step back in Philly. So 21.8, overused or underused?
When you have a starting lineup like that, and obviously it might even go down or right around and stay the same with Tobias Harris, I think it's hard to have a high usage rate, especially when he's not necessarily the lead guy in that team. You know, he's not the first option. Joel Embiid is, and Ben Simmons is more the playmaker on that team. So he's almost playing, you know, third fiddle. So I think at that rate, I think 20% is okay.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it could even be a little bit lower because Butler, you know, he's not known for being an outside threat. Of course, he's improved his three-point game this season. But other than that, he scores most of his buckets inside the three-point line. And with the roster that the Sixers have, I don't think they're going to need too much of that one-on-one action that Butler can provide inside from the mid-range or whatever. So it may go down, but I think it's fine as it is. And it's in the Sixers' best interest that it remains at that, or that it lowers for that matter.
And that's all I got for the usage rate game. Way to go, guys.
All right. So now we're going to dive into some topics. You know, I think one team's kind of stuck out to me that necessarily doesn't get love. We haven't talked about them a ton, but they made a trade at the deadline. That's Chicago Bulls. They made a move for Otto Porter, getting rid of Jabari Parker and Bobby Portis. You know, since then, 4-2. Porter's had 17 points per game, 5 rebounds, over 50% from the field, and 3. Could the Otto Porter trade really work out for the Bulls?
You know, I think one of the reasons why nobody has talked too much about the Bulls is because they barely had over 10 wins at the All-Star break. But as you said, they turned things around. They made a trade for Porter. And, I mean, not taking into account the Bulls' last game in which he went down with a leg injury, I think he's actually questionable for tonight's game. But in the previous 5 games, he's looked really good. Like really, really good. The scoring, especially the efficiency, because Porter, he was already an efficient scorer considering he's kind of like that 3-and-D, but a little bit better, you know, role player type of guy. But the efficiency in those 5 games is crazy. He's shooting 57.5% from the field and 56 from 3, which is obviously unsustainable. But if he can hover around maybe the 50% field goal mark and say 43, 44 from deep, then he's going to be a really good piece for the Bulls moving forward. And he fits pretty good with the young guys that they have in there, like especially Markkanen and LaVine. I think it's a pretty nice fit. So he's somebody they want there.
If he's shooting 49% and 44%, then this is an absolute steal, because those would be ridiculous numbers. But yeah, I mean, he's been fantastic since he's been a Chicago Bull. Yeah, he's got the leg injury. He's doubtful for tonight. The other night against Memphis, he had that 16 for 20 game from the field for 37 points. It's nice seeing him in a bigger role. I definitely think this is a piece that they can go forward with. He plays defense. He plays both sides. He can move the ball around decently, and he can score. I think he's a great, you know, number two, number three option possibly on a winning team.
And Corey mentioned, you know, it would be great numbers if he was able to shoot 50% and 44% from three. Well, he did that last season.
Did he really?
50% from the field and 44% from three last year. The year before that, 51% from the field and 43% from three.
Yeah, but the thing is, that was in kind of like a lesser role, in like more of a spot-up guy behind Wall and Beal, which was obviously an awkward fit because the three scorers were the one, the two, and the three in that case. But now that he's playing in more of a different system in Chicago, if he can have a higher, well, talking about usage rate, if he can get more shots and keep that efficiency or even increase it, then that's when you go like, wow, this guy really made a leap, because it's not the same to average. Like, I'd be lying if I say how many threes he put up in Washington, but it's not the same to average, say, 45% from three on 4 shots a game than 8 shots a game.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think obviously the looks he's going to get in Chicago are going to be a little bit tougher. You know, obviously not having John Wall and Bradley Beal, you know, Market and Levine have been good, but they're not on that level yet. So it definitely says something to him. And I think it could go both ways too. You know, sometimes when you have less shots, it's harder to shoot a good percentage. Sometimes when you have more shots, it's easier to shoot a good percentage. You know, a volume shooter, somebody who's getting up 15 shots might shoot above 50%, and then games they shoot under 10 shots, under 50%. So I think it could kind of go both ways. Obviously something to keep an eye on. I think one interesting thing overall for Chicago, it adds some real spacing to that team. You know, Porter can be an elite three-point shooter. He's obviously a solid defender. So it kind of helps open up the floor for Marketing and Levine as well.
Oh, yeah, and he's only 25 years old right now. I don't think he turns 26 until June. And he has the rest of this season and two more years on his contract. Of course, the contract is a big question. He earns $27 million next year, and then he has a $28.5 million player option for 2021. But I think he can, you know, the Bulls can develop him into a long-term piece if he continues to play well with the core they have in place. And he could be someone that they, you know, that they can keep, because as you also said, he can be something on defense. He's 6'8" and he's long enough to cause problems to opposing wings. So if he continues to put the work in, and we just need to wait and see how he does as he starts his prime.
Yeah, I mean, how Levine pops off, how Markkanen pop off. Obviously, we've seen plenty of explosive games. Zach LaVine with 40-point games this year, last one against the Celtics. I mean, they've been a lot of fun, those two guys. They can definitely put up points. Can they start to play some defense? But I think Porter Jr. has a nice role for this team going forward. Plus, he's had some deep playoff run experience already. Well, some mid-level playoff run experience that kind of does help these young guys who really haven't been there yet. So I think it's a good fit.
Yeah, I really like what they're doing in Chicago. It's almost done a complete 180, and obviously if they can get a good point guard this summer or in the draft, that could be the next move for having a really strong foundation. Obviously, Wendell Carter's been hurt a lot and hasn't got a ton of minutes this year, so that's another piece they have as well.
I actually just read earlier at OTG a great piece. Nick, could you remind me who wrote it, because I really want to shout it out? Tyler, right? That was a very well-written piece that I read earlier today, and I think everybody should check it out just to get a better picture of what the Bulls are doing right now. He also does a good job of pointing their head coach. Is that Jim Boylan? I'm pretty sure that's his name. His role moving forward with the team, so that's another good point he brings up there. Definitely make sure to check that one article out. It's really good.
Yeah, I mean, Porter trade could arguably save Boylan's job because they've been playing a lot better since then. And they talked about in the piece how Porter kind of fits the mindset he has a little bit better than some of the other guys they had. But guys, talking about another team that, you know, came up with a big win this weekend against Golden State, and that was Houston. They were out James Harden. They still pull up the win. Chris Paul's getting healthy. Can the Rockets get back to last year's level?
In my opinion, that's highly questionable. Yeah, let's leave it at that. Number one, they don't have the same personnel. And number two, the West is quite a bit tougher than it was last year. Like OKC, they're a different monster with Paul George playing at an MVP level. And Westbrook finally, you know, deciding to become a little bit more efficient as of late. And that's when there's nothing I can criticize about him when he's playing this way. And that 1-2 punch between Westbrook and George, combined with Steven Adams grabbing the offensive rebounds in the middle, and then Jeremy Grant stretching the floor and playing that aggressive defense, I think that's a really, really nice group they have there. So that's going to be another obstacle to overcome. And then you have the Nuggets, who also look pretty suspect, but you know, they're going to be a threat as well. You know, the teams are tough.
So about the Rockets, like in terms of their play, not as much as about the surrounding field. Can they get up to the level of play that they were at last year?
Well, with the personal turnaround, they basically exchanged Kenneth Faried for Luka Bamute. That's kind of like the role he's playing now. And with Faried not being able to stretch the floor as good as Bamute did, of course, his role was pretty much just stand in the corner and shoot if he got the ball. But I think the spacing things and Harden maybe trying to play a lot one-on-one, and then Chris Paul not being as healthy. I don't know. Maybe that's just me being too pessimistic. But I don't think they will get quite to that level that they were last year. I think they go out in the second round. But like with how things are looking right now, and Harden playing like a monster and Paul looking healthy, then that's when things, you know, get complicated. But I don't think they can quite match what they were doing last year. Combined with the West getting tougher, I don't think they're getting as far as they were.
They're getting there. Come on.
Don't do me like that.
I'm on with this. I'm on with the Rockets. Obviously, the slow start was rough and the injuries, but this team's coming back healthy. I'm actually really impressed by just the two performances against the Warriors because they play with a different energy, a different tenacity to them. The chip on their shoulder, because a lot of this team, even though they did lose, you know, Ariza and some core pieces, they still have, you know, Tucker, Harden, Capella, Paul. Those are the main guys who were still, and even Gerald Green. Those guys were there last year when they lost to the Warriors. And that, you know, Chris Paul was, he had some great quotes in the media following last about how close they were to beating the Warriors. And could we forget, you know, he got hurt and how close they were. And I think this team has that chip and James Harden averaging 36 points per game. As long as he's healthy, Chris Paul is starting to get healthy. Fully back in the form after being hurt. Capella's coming back. Kenneth Faried has been an absolute monster. I mean, talk about finding your niche, averaging 16 and basically 10 since becoming a Houston Rocket. I love his fit. I think Austin Rivers is gritty. I think this team will get really close. I don't think they're good enough to beat the Warriors. I think last year they were a better team to beat the Warriors. And also the addition of Shumpert, I really like what this team did. And I think they're going to be tough. I think they'll reach just about as close as they could get to last year's standards.
Yeah, I'm closer with Corey on this one than Jorge. I think you look at James Harden. He's obviously better than he was last year. He's improved his game. Chris Paul being out for so long could almost be a blessing in disguise because now he's well-rested going into the playoffs, where last year he did miss time, but he still had to play more minutes. And I think the one key factor that really like determines if the Rockets are going to make a big run or not is Eric Gordon, because some nights you look at him and he looks like he could play as well as an all-star player, and then other nights he's like 4 of 20. So that's a guy you always got to keep an eye on for the Rockets. And like Corey mentioned, a guy like Kenneth Faried really has found his role in Houston. Also, Iman Shumpert, it's going to be interesting to see what he can bring. They also brought up a few G League guys. It's about matching that energy and getting hot at the right time. I think it's a possibility for them to get to last year's level. I wouldn't lock it in, but I wouldn't be surprised if they did.
With Eric Gordon shooting 8.6 threes per game, if he can rate and shooting 32% on those 8.6 attempts, if he can just raise that to 35, 36%, this is a completely different team.
Yeah, and he's a guy that can get hot from three. Like, he'll have a game where he hits six threes, and he'll have a game where he hits zero threes. It's kind of just finding the right balance and getting consistent in the playoffs. Even last year, you know, different games throughout the playoffs, it's like, wow, Eric Gordon has 25. Now Eric Gordon has, like, 10.
Yeah, and I want to see what Shumpert can do. Obviously, he's just played three games. He got hurt. He didn't look great in those first three games, but I wonder how they can fit him in, because I think he could be a big part.
Yeah, you know, something interesting I want to point out about this Warriors game is the Rockets played only eight men, and that's kind of more like a playoff strategy. Of course, they're short in talent, but of course, like, James Harden was not playing as well.
And the Warriors were completely healthy.
Yeah.
Well, besides Draymond.
Yeah, back to Marcus Cousins. I thought that was something interesting that you'll probably see teams do in the playoffs. That'll bring up questions for the Warriors. You know, can they close out games with Cousins in there?
Yeah, and I mean, I'm biased again, but I'm not a huge believer in James Harden's, like, one-on-one attacks. And I don't think that will decrease as much with Chris Paul back. Like, of course, we've seen Paul play much better now that he's healthy. That was, you know, something we could kind of expect. But we saw last year how James Harden, you know, looking for the referee's calls, it didn't work as well in the playoffs. And I don't know if he can do it again. And maybe I'm being too big of a hater. You know, that's kind of like my style. But I don't know. It's very suspect for me still.
I mean, ideally, the one-on-one basketball that James Harden plays is not the best for when it comes to playoff times. You got to do it in a seven-game series, you got to do it at least four times to win. And granted, you know, it's got to come from the role players, like Eric Gordon, like Chris Paul. He can't do it by himself, but if he can play really close to this level while he's getting help, this Rockets team is really, really good.
Yeah, I agree. Like, that's a good point, but the question is, can the Rockets play or keep this level of play for long enough?
Yeah, and it's also about getting in rhythm at the right time. I think for James Harden, it's going to be like, is he hitting his step-back three in the playoffs or is he not? Because obviously that's been probably one of the biggest factors to his crazy season, is that's just a shot you can't really defend without fouling.
I don't think he can.
Am I surprised by your answer? No.
I don't think you're surprised. I just hate inefficient basketball and ugly basketball to watch. Like, I can stand Harden dribbling 30, 40 times each possession. Like, that's bad to watch. So then again, I'm a little bit biased, but I don't think, you know, I just think the Rockets have a tougher job this year.
Yeah, I think definitely the road to the Western Conference Finals is tougher. And, you know, who knows? OKC could still even beat them if they were to get to next year's level with the way Paul George is playing and Westbrook's efficiency. And Denver, we don't really know what to expect with the lack of playoff experience. But something to keep an eye on. Moving on to our next topic, which I feel is going to get a little bit spicy. The question is, is D'Angelo Russell a top 10 point guard this season?
I just want to ask something before we start discussing. Because I literally made a list, like, to so I can say, okay, you know what? He's here. He's there. Are you counting Drew Holiday as a point guard?
I would count Drew Holiday more as a shooting guard because that's the role he likes to play the most.
Okay.
If you want to consider him a point guard, that's all you. And I would say, just for the fact of the argument, we're not including John Wall because he's out, and probably not including Chris Paul because he's only played 36 games.
Oh, okay. So that's – I hadn't included Wall, then Paul's in a scratch. And what about Luka Doncic? Are you considering him a point guard?
I'll let Corey decide that.
Oh, that's it.
Well, I mean, I think Luka and they're more of forwards. Like they play
because is Antetokounmpo a point guard? No, but he still does ball handling duties.
Oh, okay. Well, if that's the case, then I have D'Angelo at 11. At 11, maybe 10, depending on what you think about Mike Conley and Eric Bledsoe. But I don't think he's a top 10 player. I mean, excuse me, top 10 point guard yet. He made a very big leap, but I don't think he made quite the leap. And not to discredit the great performances that he's putting up for the Nets. And I'm sure that Nick is behind his mic with an angry face right now.
But, all smiles.
But just the competition above him is just, you know, it's too tough. This is the era of point guards, the golden era for point guards. And I don't have him quite there yet.
Well, let's start like this way before – sorry to cut you off, Corey. All right. We got Steph Curry as a lock at number one, obviously. I think we're all agreeing with that. And then at the rest of the top five, you know, you got some alignment probably of Russell Westbrook, Kyrie Irving, Dame Lillard, and Kemba Walker.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then after that, I think that's when it starts to get a little bit debatable about who you want to put where. Who do you have after the top five for both of you guys?
At number six, I have Ben Simmons. That counts as a point guard, right?
Yeah, I mean, he plays point for their team. He's definitely the point guard because, I mean, it's not Jimmy Butler. It's not Tobias Harris. It's not J.J. Redick. It's not Embiid. It's Ben Simmons. He's the point guard.
Yeah, that's my number six.
I don't know. I don't think I'm as – I have – maybe I'm high on Lowry. I have Lowry six because I like his value, his impact.
Well, then I have Lowry a seven. Like, if that makes sense, you could kind of, like, switch.
I mean, I have – just to say who I think D'Lo is probably 10th if right now if I'm ranking point guards. I probably have him 10th.
And who else would you guys have in between? I'm just curious for sake of argument here.
So I have Simmons at 6, Lowry at 7. Then this is Eric Bledsoe at 8, De'Aaron Fox at 9, Mike Conley at 10, and then D'Angelo. Well, maybe you can switch Conley and Fox. I'm being too generous with De'Aaron. So, you know, I just saw the OTG basketball. We tweeted out ranked these players. So I put De'Aaron Fox over D'Angelo. He gets the slight edge because of the two-way contributions. So that's why I have him at 10, at right after Conley, and then D'Angelo at 11.
All right. So this is my 10. I'll just say my 10. I got Curry 1, Westbrook 2, Irving 3, Lillard 4th, Chris Paul 5, Lowry 6, Bledsoe 7, Kemba 8, Ben Simmons 9, D'Lo 10.
Yeah, I think that's solid. I think there's an argument for D'Lo with most of the guys after probably the top five. Like, you could probably make an argument he's been more impactful than Lowry because Lowry's been out so much and Toronto's been winning. Mike Conley really hasn't done much because the Grizzlies aren't great.
Yeah, definitely. You can't disagree.
And Eric Bledsoe, yeah, he's got the two-way ability, but if Eric Bledsoe and D'Angelo Russell swap spots and Eric Bledsoe was on the Nets, they would not be in the sixth seed right now.
Because I know today on the thread, I actually, when I tweeted before, we did like a little poll on the Twitter. I ranked 3 points. I had Fox first. And like I thought about it, and like I think more so on impact-wise, D'Lo has, I think, more of an impact, especially to the next Nets success to this point.
Yeah, and I would say – Debo started the season a little rough, and I'll give you his numbers just in 2019, so that's starting January. 24 points per game, over 7 assists, 45% from the field, 38% from 3. He just pulled ice like 2 or 3 games, and just on this season alone, he has 11 30-plus games. So 30 scored over 30 points in 11 games.
That, I mean, that's certainly impressive. And he's, it's the same thing.
Sorry to cut you off, Jorge. Like, no, don't worry. The ability to take over games a lot more than some of the other guys ahead of him.
It depends on what you value for your rankings, because I am very, like, I err on the side of consistency more so. So I have seen Fox play consistently, mostly throughout the season, and doing it both ways. So maybe that's why I'm a little bit there. Same
Fox
thing.
Fox dropped off, though. Fox started the season really hot, and then his stats came down over the last 2 months.
Right. Well, yeah, but it depends on, like, I mean, it's a never-ending debate, because it always depends on standards. But I don't disagree with the fact that after the top five, D'Lo could fight head-to-head with any of the other point guards. And then you have the arguments, yes, we can swap places, and things are going to be much different in both places. But, I would lock him in
as a top 10 point guard probably this season, right at 10 or 9 if you want to put him there. But I think he, like you said, Jorge, he has an argument to battle with a lot of the guys. It's also how he finishes the rest of the season, because he's improved as the year has progressed. He hasn't gotten worse. He's gotten better. And I will say, as a pure passer, he is elite. And that's something that you don't necessarily think about, because all the scoring numbers get the highlight. But he has some amazing touch on his passes.
I might have to take the L on this one. Probably by the end of the season, we'll see how it does. But, like, I don't want to take any credit away from him. He's been fantastic, and without a doubt, the biggest reason, excuse me, Caris LeVert, why the Nets are number 6 currently.
Yeah. In the East. Hey, I mean, he's been fantastic with the Nets. Obviously, the Nets sitting at 6 in the East with the injuries, you know, the abundance of injuries that they've suffered throughout the year, you know, and they're still hanging on. D'Lo being a big reason why, you know, another big 40-point outing against the Hornets the other night, a catch out the Brooklyn Buzz where Nick and Jack broke that down. But yeah, I think D'Lo's, for me personally, I think D'Lo, Fox, Murray, Simmons, Kemba, like that little range, I think those kind of fluctuate for me personally. I think more so my top 7, I feel like, are kind of locked in. Even though Lowry's missed time, I think his impact just, I don't know. I think because of how good the Raptors are, I kind of just have him to a little bit of a higher standard. But I think D'Lo has solidified himself to being in the top 10 conversation at this point, without a doubt.
And I don't think a lot of people would have expected that going into the season.
No, I would agree with you.
Yeah,
I think top 15 was, you know, the Jack and I were discussing as our preview, you know, top 15 was what we kind of expected with a chance to get into the top 10. I think he's definitely hit that standard. Obviously, how he plays in the playoffs and how he finishes off the season. Positive, no, he just did turn 23 on Saturday. So, but I do have a question. This was brought up to me by my guy, Harris Wichard. He sent me a text in the middle of the day just asking me crazy NBA questions. If you were starting a team right now, who would you rather have, Luka Doncic or Ben Simmons?
Luka Doncic, not even a question.
Hell yeah. Let's say Luka Doncic.
Interesting. I'm just going to play devil's advocate. I ended up going with Luka, but I think if Ben Simmons were to develop any type of jump shot, even if it was mediocre, he is a superior athlete and defender.
Sorry to cut you off.
No, go ahead, Jorge. Jump in there.
Yeah, that's the same discussion that we have with Giannis. Like, it's literally every other broadcast. We hear, oh, wait till this guy gets a jumper. Of course, it's harder with Simmons because I'm pretty sure he's yet to hit an NBA 3.
Correct.
In his career. So the difference is quite, you know, there's quite a big gap there. But as of right now and with how things are looking, I would go with Luka, but of course Simmons, just he's like the second coming of Magic Johnson, just without a jumper yet. But both are just so young, and so, you know, that we still need to see a lot more to make like a final judgment call. But for now, I would go with Luka.
I love that this was a question, because I literally had a 30-minute discussion with my friend Devin about Ben Simmons. Today, like, literally for some reason we were ranting about him. Personally, I go Luka Doncic hands down, no question, as they are right now. I mean, granted, if Ben Simmons develops a jump shot, or even really like a mid-range game, because even his like around the free throw line elbow jumpers are really hard to watch. Like, his form is just shot, so
he just looks uncomfortable,
right? And he obviously he's 24 23, he's young as hell, he's got probably even younger, maybe he's got plenty of time. to develop a jump shot. But as of right now, I take Luka Doncic for the fact that Luka can shoot. He can already play make. Granted, he's not the quite the same physical specimen as Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons is a super athlete. But I love the upside of Luka Doncic more if I was to have to choose between one of them right now. Because realistically, Ben Simmons currently is a 6'11 or 6'10 Rajon Rondo.
You know, something I didn't really consider when I first heard the question was Ben Simmons' defensive capabilities, whereas Luka, you know, he won't be too much of a positive on that. And so maybe even if he doesn't have a jumper long term, what he brings on defense, just because he's so long and, as we said, a super freak athlete, then, you know, that might be able to compensate the shooting. Like, it depends on perspective, but I don't think it's quite as lopsided as I first thought. Like, I'm still going with Luka, but thinking about Simmons' defensive capabilities, then it's not as lopsided as I initially thought.
I think Simmons, too, as you look at the versatility defensively, he can pretty much guard 1 through 5 in a way the NBA is moving. You know, that makes a lot of sense. And I think if you surround him with the right, you know, pieces, he'll be elite, because if he has, you know, 4 floor spacers with him, he'll be doing great. Luka, on the other hand, can fit into so many different roles. Also, I just checked both their ages. Ben Simmons, 22. Luka, 19. He's actually turning 20 on Thursday, which is the same birthday as me, so shout out to him. He just became
awesome.
But, guys, any other things you want to cover before we get out of here?
I think that covers it. Miles Turner, more usage. I just wanted to clarify. More usage for Miles Turner with no Oladipo.
Jorge, just in case we don't get you on the show again, we most likely will. And, you know, Jorge's a big Heat guy. Check out his podcast, Heater's Gonna Heat. Also, check out Corey's podcast, Flex's Hoops. Are the Heat going to make the playoffs?
Don't make me go through this again, please. I've been asked this question literally maybe 4 or 5 times over the last couple of days because of the last 2 L's that we took against the Pistons and the – who are the other guys?
They know better than us. That's your squad.
it was just so ugly to watch. But as how things are looking right now, I might be leaning towards the no side. Like, they might be a ninth seed. Like, as optimistic as I want to be, I find it quite hard. Like, the East is weak. The East is weak, but it's just tough. Like, I don't want to doubt Spoelstra or Pat Riley, but, man, it's the on-court stuff. It just doesn't seem like it's working. So they might be able to snag in as an 8 seed, but with how the Magic is playing and the Hornets, Kemba's looking fire still, and the Pistons, they're still beating us, and the Nets, they're not slowing down. Like, it's tough, man. It's tough being a Heat fan these days.
You got your championships, and you had LeBron for a while, so don't complain.
I didn't want to see Wade. I didn't want to see him go out this way. Like, he doesn't deserve it. We wanted one last playoff run. You know, hashtag one last playoff appearance, hashtag one last dance. But it's looking like an actual dream with every day that passes. It's tough, man. It's tough.
Corey, what do you think? Do you think they're going to get in there or they're going to miss out?
I mean, right now, I have to be honest, I've been really surprised at the Detroit Pistons. I'm actually not looking forward to playing against them tonight.
Their offense has been on fire. I think, like, post-All-Star break, they're like top 5 or top 10 in offensive rating.
Yeah, and a big reason why is Reggie Jackson actually looks like Reggie Jackson.
Point guard.
Yeah, really aggressive, shooting with confidence. He's been a revelation for them since the All-Star break, so I'm watching him. I'm interested to see what Andre Drummond looks like. So I think the Pistons are a lock right now for me. The Nets are a lock. I don't see them falling back. So now that last spot's between the Hornets, Heat, and the Magic. I don't think the Magic have enough. I think the
Magic have, like, one of the easiest schedules, so I'll just throw that out there. Like, I want to say third or fourth easiest schedule remaining.
Well, I mean, they looked good last night when they beat the Raptors. Granted, there was no Kawhi Leonard, but they kind of got out there running. I like what Vucevic does for that team, especially Terrence Ross. I mean, off the bench, how did no one want to – I mean, granted, they wanted to make the playoffs. So that's probably why they didn't trade him. But I would have loved to see him on a contending team. So I'm going to say they still make it, though. As of right now, I still say they make it. I think the Hornets are shit. I don't think they make it. Kemba Walker is very good. I don't believe in the guys around him. I just don't think they have enough. I think they have one of the five toughest schedules remaining, which doesn't bode well for them. So I'm going to say the Heat do hold on because of the vets. I know Goran Dragic is coming back, so I'll give them a slight edge. But if Orlando's got an easy schedule, that could be trouble.
Just a quick shout out to
Battle for Florida.
Quick shout out to the latest Heaters Gonna Heat. We actually, Richard and I, we spoke about our expectations for the remainder of the season for the Miami Heat, of course. And as optimistic as I wanted to be in that episode, it's been two games since then, two bad losses. And I think more than the Hornets, it's the Magic that scare me a little bit for that 8 seed. Just because Vucevic is playing so good. And as you say, Terrence Ross, he's crazy. He can catch fire in a nutshell. And then they have Aaron Gordon. He shows up every now and then.
Isaac's been better too.
Really good. Yeah, exactly. Jonathan Isaac has been playing really good as of late. And if they can, if they continue on a roll, the Heat, I think they right now they have the 7th or 8th hardest remaining schedule, while the Magic are top 5 as an easiest. I'm pretty sure those are the numbers. I checked them before that last Heaters Gonna Heat before we recorded. So the schedule doesn't favor Miami. We still have a couple of meetings with the Warriors, the Bucks, the Pacers still. So things are not looking good for the South Beach Ballers right now. And that's sad.
Can we also talk about how weak that division is in general? Because that division's
that's an easy division.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I talked about it with Rich. Like, at the beginning of the season, I think, well, depending on how you looked at the Wizards, but the Heat could arguably be the best team in the Southeast Division. As I said, depending on how you see the Wizards. Now that Dwight Howard is out for the season, same thing with Wall, and it's just now Bradley Beal alone. Then that leaves it with – it's the Heat, the Wizards, the Magic, the Hawks, and the
Wait, Dwight Howard's out for the season?
No, I think Dwight actually may be coming back.
Oh, he may be coming back for the last game?
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I know he was rehabbing. I don't know if that means that he's going to try to come back for this year or if it's going to be more so for next year. And Jorge, sorry to cut you off, but the teams in that division are obviously the Heat, the Magic, the Hornets, the Wizards, and the Hawks.
Oh, the Hornets, those were the guys that I was
Yeah, no team above 500, so just throw that out there.
It's weak. It's weak, yeah, for sure. And I just expected the Heat to do much better given that was the competition.
I will say the Dragic injury hurt them a lot, too. Like, that's something to take into consideration. He was an all-star for them last year. But you want more Heat talk, check out Heaters Gonna Heat. As always, pleasure, Jorge and Corey. Make sure you check out the show, iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube.
Peace out, knuckleheads.
Thanks for having me, and I hope I can bring some more fire sometime soon.
More than the Heat.